Minnesota Law on a sunny Saturday outside. Might be a little bit of snow melting out there, hopefully. Eric Nelson in for Steve Thompson. Glad you've tuned us in. As always, Tom Schroyer in the house. And we have a special guest, Ed Weiner. And we got a lot to talk about today, guys. Divorce myths and folklore. That might be something where we need about 3-4 hours.
Well, as a matter of fact, we're on our second hour of this very same set of topics, Eric, because we didn't get a chance to finish it all the first time when Ed was putting this together for us, I guess last summer when it was still summery out there. But today's not too bad.
No, it isn't, Tom, and I'm very happy to be here and looking forward to finding out what our listeners have to say about this.
Ed is just coming off some recent celebrity, Eric, having spent a really wonderful session with Michelle LaToya on the afternoon show here, talking about antenuptial or premarital agreements.
Michelle was terrific. She confused me for an NFL player, which I found to be very complimentary.
And indeed, she...
bulging biceps.
It's the bulging something. I'm not sure.
No, she thought I was a defensive lineman with the big stomach.
Yeah, there you go. Say, Ed really doesn't need a whole lot of introduction, but I did want to share some information about his background with our listeners, because they know already from prior appearances that Ed is the co-chair of the Moss and Burnett Family Law practice area and in our law firm. And Ed has a long and distinguished career as a family attorney, doing family law matters since way back into the 1970s, shortly after his graduation from law school. And I know, Ed, initially started working in family law and fell in love with the practice area.
I did. I was a business lawyer prior to my introduction to my first divorce case. And when I handled that, I said to myself, this is why I went to law school. Maybe feel good about what I was doing. Gave me a chance to help people put their lives back together. And as we say, the rest is history.
Well, I know that, too, you were hired by a then very, very top gun family attorney out of Hollywood, California, named Marvin Mitchelson, who people may remember as handling the Lee Marvin Palimony case. He hired you as his co-counsel here in a high-profile case.
He did, and he was a gentleman. He had a press agent, and every time a story got into the news, I was included, and that really helped people become aware of me in the Twin Cities.
Well, it was quite an honor that he selected you, because at that point you were still relatively new on the scene, and so it was quite a commendation, because there were other folks, let's face it, who were more senior in the family law bar at that time.
Well, I graduated from law school. I was 12. And no, it was quite an honor, and I was happy to be contacted, and it was a difficult case, but we got it settled.
Well, I've always wanted to share with our audience that I was so impressed, as I was still a relatively new lawyer, because the Minnesota Law and Politics magazine interviewed all of the Hennepin County and Ramsey County trial judges to see who the best trial lawyers were, and they picked you as one of the top 10, and I was very, very impressed with that.
Tom, thank you, but my earphones are getting so tight on my head because of all of this praise. So
we'll move along, and I hope Eric's keeping his hand on his Gopher sports tickets and pro sports tickets, because the last time when Ed was here, he managed to negotiate a deal with Steve Thompson for his appearance fee here.
I actually threatened to sue him, and he gave me his tickets.
And Steve is a guy who likes to stay out of litigation, so I'm sure that he coughed them up pretty quickly. Again, Ed Weiner, Tom Schroyer here, Minnesota Law, 1212. We are going to take phone calls. If you want to give us a ring, you have any questions. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who have questions about divorce myths and folklore. 651-989-9226. In the Twin Cities Metro, or 866-989-9226. That's the toll-free line. Jim Engblom will pick up the tab. He's here as always. And if you miss a part of this show, maybe a chunk of it, or maybe you're going to want to catch it all later again, it will be podcasted at WCCORadio.com. And I know Moss and Barnett has a great website, too, as well, don't they, Tom?
Right, exactly right. Our website's at moss-barnett.com, and we have a number of links to resources about legal matters, including family law related topics and all of the topics related that we address on our show, as well as bios, of course, of our attorneys, as we are one of Minnesota's business law firms, and so we provide a wide variety of services. And as you mentioned, we are interested in hearing from folks with questions, obviously a great opportunity to talk to a dean of the family law practice area here in the Upper Midwest, Ed Weiner. Phone calls or text messages. And so
81807. 81807, powered by Wellington Windows and Door Company. So if you want to send us a text, we're hip. We take text messages as well as your average phone call.
Ed, I thought we'd start off here today talking about expensive celebrity divorces and then segue into premarital agreements. But my goodness, we're seeing here recent news reports about celebrities with their marriages busting up and some big dollars being paid out. Michael Jordan having to pay a check for $168 million to his estranged wife, Juanita Vanoy Jordan. Neil Diamond, $150 million. Steven Spielberg, $100 million to his former wife, Amy Irving. And the list goes on and on. What's going on here with these folks? How come they don't have better premarital agreements?
Well, Tiger Woods, Tom, has brought celebrity divorces to the forefront again, although we have a constant stream of them during the year. When celebrity divorces occur, people think, well, there's been some change in the world. All of a sudden, we have celebrities getting divorced, but many people, including celebrities, get divorced, many prominent people, that most of us don't ever hear a thing about it. In some cases, the celebrities actually want to create the buzz because they might not have enough PR out there, and they want it to hit the media, and they want people all over the nation to be talking about them. I don't think Tiger is in that group, by the way, but it's interesting. He's in the news. We just heard that on the top of the hour. We heard that Tiger's again in the news, that he's gone to a sex therapy place.
Well, and speaking of Tiger Woods and his situation, we've also seen a number of reports to the effect that his wife has retained some really prominent divorce lawyer out of Los Angeles, Hollywood, California. And the word is that they're going to try to bust up the premarital agreement that she signed when she married Tiger. What gives? Are premarital agreements enforceable or not?
Well, it's one of the areas I practice a lot in, and that is premarital agreements, enforcing them and, frankly, attacking them. The agreements, if drafted appropriately in this state, and if they're fair, they will be enforceable. Every state has its own law with respect to such agreements. Tiger's antenuptial agreement has been in the news a lot. Nobody in the media, I don't think, has a copy of it, so I'm wondering how accurate some of those reports are. But celebrities, wealthy people, and in fact, everybody almost should have an antenuptial premarital agreement. And the reason that celebrities need those agreements is because they have two things they're trying to protect. One is obviously property and income, and the other is their persona, their reputation, their image. Look at Tiger. He's taken a hit on millions and millions of dollars of endorsements because his divorce went public. And the antenuptial agreement is going to be attacked, and he has an incentive to pay extra money instead of trying to enforce the agreement.
All right. We've all focused in a lot on the Tiger Woods situation. Derek Jeter announced the other day he's going to get married in November. What would be your advice going in to somebody who's a mega celebrity, whether it be Derek Jeter or, you know, a Bruce Springsteen or somebody in that scope? Any advice going in?
Certainly, absolutely. And I've handled some of the celebrities, not the two you mentioned, but I have been in those cases. And the advice is for the celebrities, and frankly for almost every person, is to look at the advantages of obtaining a premarital agreement. A premarital agreement allows people to, in effect, stay out of the courtroom, have your own agreement control what happens.
All right, very good. Ed Weiner, Tom Schroyer, from Moss and Barnett. This is Minnesota Law. We will come back. We will take some phone calls. We have a couple of lines open if you want to give us a ring. 651-989-9226 or 866-989-9226. Also, send us a text. 81807, 81807, powered by Wellington Windows and Door Company. This is News Radio 830 WCCO. Minnesota Law on a Saturday in the Twin Cities. Eric Nelson in for Steve Thompson. Glad you've made us a part of your day. It's never an easy topic to discuss, but it's constantly in the news, whether it be celebrities or the average Joe or Jane. Divorce. We're talking about divorce myths and folklore. Tom Schroyer here and Ed Weiner, who is basically, that's his forte, handling divorce cases, whether they be high profile or behind the scenes.
That's right. That's right. We'd like to keep them behind the scenes, frankly. We don't like high profile.
Right. We certainly don't litigate our family law cases in the media.
No, we don't. We settled 98% to 99% of those cases.
Say, Eric, we decided to try a little new feature here today. We're going to ask our listeners if they care to text in the answer to this question, and we'll reveal the answer as we're going off the air here at the top of the hour. and that is the whether or not most athletes and celebrities and wealthy people have premarital agreements. True or false? Most wealthy celebrities, athletes, and wealthy people have premarital agreements. And so we'll look for text messages on that here throughout the show, and we'll tally them up and give the answer at the end of the program here with Ed Weiner on Minnesota Law. As Ed, we're circling back to talk again, touching on premarital agreements, sometimes called antenuptial agreements. We talked about the possibility that, for example, if Tiger Woods goes through a dissolution of his marriage, that his wife might try to bust up their premarital agreement. What are some of the grounds on which somebody can attack a valid premarital agreement with after-the-fact hindsight?
Tom, as I was mentioning, every state has its own law that determines what those factors would be. Let's talk about Minnesota first. And I've done premarital agreements in other states other than Minnesota. But basically, the agreement has to meet what are called procedural requirements, and they also have to be fair. It's called substantive fairness. The substantive fairness is very difficult to figure out because marriages can end in a year, or they can last for 30 or 40 or 50 years. And what's fair in year one typically is not going to be fair in year 30. So we have to look into crystal balls, and we have to draft these things so that they'll be fair based upon the duration of the marriage, the growth of the estate, and all of those factors.
That has to be just about impossible. And furthermore, can you possibly anticipate all of the issues that might arise at the end of the day following, you know, some period of a marriage?
Well, one of the myths people have in this state and across the country is that these agreements are not enforceable. But if they're properly done, they are enforceable. And part of the challenge is what you just said, Tom, and that is we try to anticipate, try to look in the crystal ball. We do the best we can. And as long as the agreement reflects a fair resolution for both parties, we are confident, and the courts are backing us up on this, that they will be enforced.
So are you finding that the judges are more and more inclined to honor premarital agreements on the grounds that they've been fairly bargained for, and I suppose also because it's just an easier way to slice up the marital assets at the end of the day?
I don't know that the easiness of it versus having to try a case or whatever is a factor, but I do know that our world has changed dramatically in the 40 years I've been in practice. In the old days, women used to be considered in need of special protection, so the prenuptial agreements could not be signed by them because they would be unable to understand what they were doing, which obviously is a crock. That's a legal term. I'll describe it later and define it. But in any event, now we understand that people should be able to enter into contracts. And these are, let me ask you, Tom, do you think these agreements are anti-marriage?
Well, I think that they're very challenging to talk about, I would guess, especially on first marriages. At a time when most people are marrying early in their career, their lives, they don't have a lot of assets. It may not be anything of any moment or concern to them. I would think, though, on the other hand, for a second marriage or third or beyond, that it would almost be mandatory for people to do.
Well, in first marriages, people may inherit. They may receive gifts. They may become extremely successful. They may have something that was premarital, an asset. For example, let's assume they're thinking of writing a book and they've been working on it in their head, perhaps even working on it before they get married. They write that book during the marriage. It becomes very valuable. Maybe that should be protected with a prenup. Prenups are for everyone because all of us cherish what we have. We want to protect it. These agreements are not anti-romance. And I think that if people talk about their financial relationship after they marry, they can have a stronger relationship. They can avoid problems. They can avoid seeing divorce lawyers.
Now, do both sides have to have lawyers when they do a premarital agreement, or is it possible to do one of these without having even any lawyers involved?
In my practice, I recommend that everyone have a lawyer because I think that we can better ensure fairness and that someone's not being coerced, etc. Our law in Minnesota requires the opportunity to have a lawyer for an antenuptial premarital agreement. A postnuptial agreement, which is another agreement that people should consider, you must have a lawyer.
What about the state of California? I always hear that's one of the worst places to get divorced in.
Well, you hear that perhaps because they are a community property state. Community property states, there are about 10 of them, I believe, and those states are different than Minnesota. We're an equitable distribution. The reason is California, the community property means anything that comes into the marriage is generally going to be shared equally if there's a divorce. And that can create a lot of hardship and a lot of unfairness.
All right, more Minnesota law coming up. It's 1228 on News Radio 830 WCCO. It's 12:35 on a sunny Saturday in the Twin Cities. Minnesota Law, Eric Nelson, Tom Schroyer, Ed Weiner here until 1 o'clock. We're talking about divorce myths and folklore. And again, if you missed it, Tom threw out the question, send us your text answer. Do you think most celebrities, that would be athletes, entertainers, singers, actors, actresses, do you think most of them have prenuptial agreements? 81807, 81807. Our text messaging service powered by Wellington Windows and Door Company. So, guys, it's in the news all the time. We just keep seeing these celebrities and athletes and, you know, entertainers trip up, and it becomes public consumption. Ed, how do you go about keeping it out of the news? Because I know you handled something with Kirby Puckett and Prince, and you've been involved with some of the heavy hitters here in town.
The vast majority of the cases, Eric, no one ever hears about, thank goodness. We do see some of these cases hit the media. There sometimes are leaks at the courthouse, etc. What we try to do is respect people's privacy, especially prominent people, because there's so many people out there willing to see them for their worst and try to find bad things to say about them. And so what we do is we try to do things in a confidential way. We try sometimes to use private judges rather than go to the courthouse. And sometimes we'll keep vital information out of the court file.
When it gets out, though, in the Tiger Woods situation is a glaring example. Okay, it's out there. He's gone into a bunker, literally. I mean, he's gone on his website, but no public appearances. If you had his ear, what would you tell him?
Well, I think he has to do that. You've seen him lose all of the sponsors that he's lost so far, and he'll probably lose more. This could not be the worst possible thing for him to have this kind of negative publicity. You notice he had his accident at Cadillac, and he's pitching Buicks. We're here in the Buick studio today, so I'm kind of sensitive to that. The point being that I would tell Tiger to do what he's doing, and that is go into the bunker, get treated, do the marriage counseling, try to save his marriage, try to get back on the right track. That's what I would counsel him to do. And I think he's hearing that from people.
Would you be advising him, though, as well to put together a PR campaign to try to get a hold of the story and try to direct and control it a little bit better?
I don't know if direct and control is a proper terminology. I think there's been a lot of misstatement out there in the media. I've asked on Michelle Tafoya's show, for example, I was wondering how everybody knew about his antenuptial agreement being modified. The parties aren't going to talk about it. The attorneys aren't going to talk about it. Who's talking about it? I think a lot of these things are made up. So, yes, I would recommend that he have public relations people. And he obviously, we haven't seen a lot of that yet. I'm assuming he will do this, but he's not getting much publicity out there that makes him look good, which, and he should have some of that. He's done some of the right things. My apologies.
I guess I'm wondering, would you have advised him early on to make one public appearance, maybe some sort of an admission of wrongdoing, and then maybe let the thing kind of play out? Because as we've seen, you know, with, say, a steroid admission by Alex Rodriguez, there's a firestorm for a month, then it dies down. People have forgotten about it and moved on.
In some of my high-profile cases, we have had the client retain public relations experts. And I like your idea, though, Eric. I think that it would have been important for him to stand up, look a camera in the eye, and say, I messed up, I'm sorry, I'm human, I did terrible things, and I think he would have been better off than the way he handled it.
I'm going to say, without any basis in professional experience on this, though, that I thought he had his face was pretty cut up after the initial incident, and you know, I'm not sure you'd want to have the exposure on the bruises on the face that could haunt you for the rest of your career, especially with some of the highly defined imaging that digital photography is capable of doing these days.
Well, I for one, and I assume many millions of people did receive some joke emails where they had his face cut up and present, and it was terrible. I think admitting that he did something wrong despite his face, most of us are willing to forgive people.
Well, that's true. That's for sure. And so let's talk about, you know, some of those general concepts that people have. Ed, I thought maybe we'd go through some of the myths that that people have about family law. And let me just ask you a few true-false questions, and then you can explain your thoughts on them as we go through them, if you don't mind. So first of all, Ed, true or false, it is not possible to have an amicable divorce?
Well, obviously, there are many divorces that are not amicable, so it depends on what your personal experience has been. And some of the people texting us and calling in, I'm sure, have had terrible things happen in their divorce cases. But I think the answer is false. I think people can have and do have, and in my practice and the practice of many other good lawyers that I work with, we do see amicable divorces. The public doesn't see it. The media doesn't see it. They don't want to see it, the media, because obviously their job is to bring the news and have interesting things to deal with. But yes, Tom, there are many, many, in fact, I mentioned 98%, 99% of the cases settle. Many of them are very amicable divorces.
All right. So in that regard, then, true or false, you should never hire the lawyer with the highest hourly rate to do a divorce.
Well, I particularly do not like that one, that myth. The answer is false. The lawyer with the highest hourly rate may be the best lawyer to handle your case. That lawyer may use a team approach. That lawyer may be more efficient than other lawyers. And if you settle your case quickly and the fees are X rather than 5X, you can come out much better financially with a good attorney. And there are many, many good attorneys out there who really care about their clients and do a good job.
Ed, true or false, if you are going through a divorce or anticipating one and you want to get even with your spouse, hire the nastiest lawyer who will litigate every issue to the death.
Well, I would say false, Tom. And here's what I'd say. If people would just picture themselves slashing their wrists and then bleeding on their spouse, who does it hurt more? So if you get a mad dog lawyer and you are a mad dog client and you want to punish, I use a phrase called emotional compensation. They want to recover emotional compensation for every real and imagined wrong they suffered during this marriage. You're only hurting yourself. You're hurting your children. You may hurt the other party for a period of time, but basically it's self-destructive behavior. It should not happen. We try to prevent it from happening.
All right. Here's one. We picked this up off the internet here today. It is usually men who initiate divorce proceedings. True or false?
Well, actually, I've heard that stated a different way, Tom. I've heard that men are the ones who cheat on their wives all the time, and therefore they're the ones who divorce their wives. Well, the statistics show that that is false. In fact, two-thirds to three-quarters, depending on which statistics you read, of the divorce cases are commenced by women. And also, 75 to 80% of the men, and this may not be too accurate, report that they have not cheated on their spouse in a marriage.
All right, very good. And so another statistic we hear a lot is that 50% of all marriages are ending in divorce. Is that true or false?
You know, that's a tough one, Tom, because I've questioned that myself, but most of the statistics out there do come in 40 to 50% of marriages will end in divorce. But what they're looking at the total number of marriages. And I think some of those look at the number of marriages per year, and let's assume the number is greater than this, but say there's a million marriages, or it's perhaps less than that, say a million marriages per year, and there are 500,000 divorces. That's where they're getting that percentage. It's really 50% of the new marriages. But no one can argue that there isn't, frankly, a huge number of people whose marriages end in divorce. And I don't know the exact number, but it's huge.
True or false, Ed, the sluggish economy is affecting the rate of divorce. I've seen stories where people just say, you know what, we can't afford to split up.
Well, you know, that's interesting, and I think that it has to be both. That's the answer, because it depends on the socioeconomic level of the particular marriage. Our family law group at Moss and Barnett had a banner here last year in terms of, and I don't mean to say banner, but we were swamped. And we had more divorces than the prior year to handle. Many of our clients, there was a period of time when there was a delay in people going forward. And there are many people who are staying together because they just can't afford to have two dwellings, for example.
All right, very good. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and finish up with Ed Weiner, Tom Schroyer. Jim Engblom is here, our studio coordinator, the Big M, Chris Elston. The topic today, divorce myths and folklore. What's fact, what's fiction? This is Minnesota Law on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
I'm so busy. Can't I get out of jury duty?
Did you know prospective jurors in Minnesota are selected from the rolls of registered voters? Failure to respond to a summons to jury duty can result in a bench warrant being issued for your arrest.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Minnesota Law brought to you by Moss and Barnett. Today's topic, divorce myths and folklore. Tom Schroyer, Ed Weiner here until 1 o'clock. We threw out the text question, do most celebrities have prenuptial agreement? That would include entertainers, athletes, actors, politicians. And it's a resounding, whopping landslide that the texts that have come in, everybody says yes.
Ed, can that be true?
Well, it can be true, but it's not true based on the statistics we see. Many people do not enter into prenuptial agreements who should enter into those agreements. And what I've seen, and there have not been definitive studies, most of the celebrities, I believe, do have prenups, but many wealthy people do not. And more importantly, the children of the wealthy people, the grandchildren who wind up with inheritances and gifts and part of the business, etc., those people do not even consider prenups. They get married, and all of a sudden, a business is dragged into a divorce case.
Yeah, the statistic we saw here offline here this morning was that only 4% of people in our categories actually have premarital agreements, which is really quite amazing when you think about the publicity that surrounds this area and the prominence that that we see associated with these huge dollar payouts at the end of the day.
You know, it's the anti-romance, anti-marriage theory. It's also that people think they're not enforceable. And both of those things are wrong.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about some gender bias issues that people, naturally enough, in the divorce context, have considered to be true over the years. We talked about earlier who initiates divorces, men or women. It turns out it's mostly women. Let's talk about some of the other things we hear, that you hear as a practitioner in this area around gender bias issues. And let me just throw it out here, get the ball rolling with this one. True or false, it's better if you're a woman to have a female as your judge in your divorce case.
It's actually neither true nor false because it's subjective. The answer would be probably it depends on who the judge is. But for the most part, I'm happy to say that judges try to do their job the way they're swore an oath to do, which is they try to be unbiased based upon gender or any other factor. So sure, there are some men who favor men, and there are some female judges who favor women, and there's vice versa. Most practitioners try to figure out if that occurs with some judges, but we very rarely find it based on gender.
All right. Another gender-oriented question. You hear this, at least occasionally I do, and that is, true or false, only women receive spousal maintenance, which is also known as alimony.
False. The person who receives maintenance is the person who qualifies for maintenance, which is Minnesota's term for alimony. So that person has to meet the statutory standards. Let me ask Eric a question. Eric, true or false, men never get custody of the children?
False.
Okay, what percentage of men do get custody, Eric?
30%.
Good guess. I don't know what percentage they do, but when we're talking about this, obviously there's statistical variations across the country. But men nowadays have played in recent years a much, much more prevalent role in co-parenting their children, and many men wind up with shared custody. That's what we try to do where it's appropriate.
And that kind of leads me to this question. I mean, the assumption would seem to be, if you don't have kids in a marriage that's going to break up, it's easier, a little bit more seamless. If you do have kids, it's stickier. Is that true or false?
You know, again, it depends on the people. If you think about it, if you have kids, you might be more inclined not to fight about things because you don't want to drag your children in. You don't want the parents of those children to be upset where it might impact the kids. So caring parents are going to try to avoid conflict just as much, if perhaps more so, than single, parents without a child.
So false.
Yeah. Well, when we say true or false, it depends.
Ed, here's just a question I've always wondered about. If I give my spouse a gift during marriage, does she get to keep it?
In a divorce? The answer in Minnesota is maybe. And the reason it's maybe, Tom, is because gifts from third persons, from mom, dad to wife, for example, those might be non-marital, probably would be. But gifts from spouses to each other are considered marital property. And if there's a divorce, those gifts can be divided, or the value of those gifts can be included, and it typically are in a division of the property.
All right. So a variation on that, it plays off of a bit of a local headline here we've been seeing, and maybe for about the past 3 months. If I am married and I make a gift to, let's say, a girlfriend, is that something that I can be required to also then have to pay part of to my wife as a part of our marital estate?
Yes, there are a couple of different concepts that apply to that, a couple of different statutes. But basically, if someone has taken money out of the marital estate and used it inappropriately just before or during a divorce, that person might be charged back for that, as one would expect, because if a person has given a $1,000 gift to a boyfriend or girlfriend, that person has, in effect, taken $500 of the spouse who's injured, the injured spouse, so to speak, and used that person's money to make that gift. That isn't fair. It's not seen as equitable in Minnesota, and typically people are charged for that.
All right, quickly, it is actually the same local and prominent case. If I am married and I have an affair and I also have a premarital with my wife, will my wife get more money if I've had the affair and it becomes known and public during the divorce?
We have no fault. And so the courts are not going to punish people for having affairs. They will look at the financial issues that we just discussed, if somebody's taking money out of the estate for a boyfriend, a girlfriend, or something similar. But they don't punish people. So I don't think that a judge is going to say you get more because you're a victim of an affair.
All righty. And so that even with a premarital agreement that talks about not having extramarital affairs, that would still be the case, you think?
Well, sometimes premarital agreements, people pay more to settle the issue so that things do not become public.
Guys, it's been a lot of fun, informative, enlightening. And, Tom, you worked so hard today. We're going to give you next week off.
Well, it'll be great to be listening to the Gopher game next Saturday. And then the following Saturday, I wanted to make a special comment here, Eric. We're going to have in studio the chairman of the board of Moss & Barnett, Dave Singer. We're very, very honored to have Dave appear with us. Dave is one of the premier business and estate planning attorneys in the state of Minnesota. And we thought it'd really be fun and interesting for our listeners to hear what a business lawyer actually does and how they view the practice of law, because it is a bit different, I would say, Ed, from what you and I do.
Absolutely. Absolutely different.
And so we're very much encouraged by having Dave Singer on our program next weekend. And, of course, we look forward to folks calling in and texting in their questions and visiting our website, moss-barnett.com. Moss & Barnett, of course, one of the business law firms in the upper Midwest, and so we have a lot of folks to bring with many, many different areas of the law to talk about.
And if you're just joining us and missed a chunk of this show, it will be podcasted on our website, WCCORadio.com, or if you just want to listen to something again, that's all available. So make sure you go to WCCORadio.com. Ed, it's been a lot of fun. I know you probably have a million stories to tell.
Well, Eric, I do, and I appreciate being here.
And I like the Johnny Cash look, the man in black today.
I have to look tough.
All right, very good. Tom Schroyer, Ed Weiner, our thanks to Jim Engbloom and the Big M, Chris Elston. 12:57 is our time. This has been Minnesota Law here on News Radio 830 WCCO.